Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
I'm Matt from the Future Europe podcast. Have you ever wondered what the future will be like? How will you drive in the future? How will you eat, learn, keep yourself warm? Will the future be more social? How are they going to look after you when you're old? And maybe, who are they? The answers are all on Future Europe. Subscribe to Future Europe and get the future now.
Future Europe. Framtidens Europa.
Europa Futura.
Europa a jövőben.
Budúcnosť Európy.
I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Blood Ties podcast. I am Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father Geoffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. It's a special day today because it's actually Molly's birthday.
It's true everyone, it's my birthday day. So we're having some wine even though it's lunchtime because it's my birthday. So we're allowed.
And we're celebrating gently.
Yes, it's been a very nice day and my colleagues have all taken me out for a surprise breakfast at Dean Street Townhouse, which is very glamorous, and I've had lots of cards and presents from people, and I feel very lucky.
I haven't been out for breakfast. I've been quietly working away, partly preparing this podcast. But it has been a good week, actually. Busy. Our friends at Joe Allen in Covent Garden, where we've been having lunch on a Saturday for the last 16 years, are very excited about this podcast and think it's wonderful.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it? That's, yeah.
And we were thinking of perhaps one day doing one in situ.
Yeah, we might do a live from Joe Allen podcast, perhaps with some interviews.
Yes, because a lot of my friends in publishing have been saying, well, if you ever think of interviewing an author, we'll provide an author or two, which would be rather wonderful.
But you've also got a lot of friends who we could interview who been doing this like you for a while.
Oh, absolutely.
So that would be
very good. I've read a couple of good books this week. One in particular, it's called The Girl in the Fog. It's written by an Italian called Donato Carisi, and it is a splendid, beautifully written account of a girl disappearing in a small town in the Italian Alps, and a special agent is dispatched to try and find her with very complex consequences. Very, very good.
Sounds interesting.
I've also read the latest James Patterson.
Oh, yeah?
The People versus Alex Cross. It's very easy to sneer at James Patterson, but when he does it on his own, he is certainly among the best in the business, as good as Baldacci.
He wouldn't be going on for so long if he wasn't good at it.
Yeah, but I mean, what has he written? It's 147 novels in 25 years. I mean, extraordinary, prolific.
That's amazing.
It's extraordinary.
You have to have a lot of discipline.
Well, he also has a lot of help, but he is an absolutely brilliant storyteller. And this is a book, well, he created Alex Cross, the character at the heart of 25 of his books. And he... I think he invests in him the greatest of his imagination. And this is a particularly good one.
Yeah. Oh. Excellent. And when, just to recap on what we've been up to since we were last here, we both saw Network at the National, which we were talking about, weren't we?
We were.
I liked it very much. Bryan Cranston was really good.
Very, very good.
What did you think, Dad?
I've also seen Follies.
Oh,
And this week I've seen Ink, the play about Rupert Murdoch, which is also very good.
Was it good?
It was very good.
Who's in that?
A little long, no one really. But funnily enough, who did we run into in the foyer? James Noble.
Ah.
He of War and Peace and Grantchester and looking very cheery.
I feel like that's unfair of us, and actually there are probably some important people in Ink who I should know. Isn't Richard Croyle in it?
I think so, yes. But I'm not very good at the actors.
No, you
not
don't
my
know
generation.
Who everyone is, do you?
No,
that's
not my generation. I'm always struggling.
It's actually my job to know who everyone is. Yes. If so much theatre, Dad.
Yes, it's been a bit of a rush.
Cultural.
I want to see Film Stars Don't Die in
Liverpool.
Me too, Liverpool.
So much. I just haven't had a chance and I
nor,
will be
nor,
off.
Nor me. I very much would like to see that.
Me too. Apparently the Florida Project is really brilliant as well.
Is it? Oh,
directed by the super cool director whose name I can't remember, who did this movie called Tangerine, which did really well at the festivals like 2 years ago. And it was... Anyway, this is his latest one. It's all unknowns apart from Willem Dafoe.
Ah, well, Willem Dafoe is worth having
right.
in anything.
Willem Dafoe. We were, actually, that's probably inappropriate. I once worked at an agency that represented Willem Dafoe, and he rang me once to say that I had his address wrong on a movement order. I was only like 24, and it was a big day. It was a big day because it's like, hello, it's Willem, and you're like, oh, God.
Oh, I'm pleased.
I'm starstruck. I'm starstruck, and I need to remain professional.
One of the problems of being an agent is probably stopping being starstruck.
You'd be surprised who you like get starstruck by and who, like, you know, you have to sort of take it in your stride sometimes. So I've like been so fortunate and met such amazing people. And it's like being like, oh, this is Jim Broadbent. And I'm like, hello, I'm Molly. Like, as if I didn't know.
Yes.
That
is interesting. I found myself talking to Matt Fry of Channel 4 News. He both presents it and is Europe editor. Very a nice man. And you sometimes have to pinch yourself. I mean, I'm very lucky, like you, I know a lot of people. And it's fascinating. You almost have to judge your own reaction to them.
Yeah.
And I think one of the other things that's been interesting in the last period since we did this is that I've done another set of television interviews and more serial killers, one American, one Polish. And... some people are fascinated. Literally, you have researchers or you have producers, and all they can talk about is, oh, well, I phoned, you know, the detective, or, oh, well, I was in. And it's almost kind of extraordinary. You know, for me, I always find crime, in a way, chilling.
And they, I think we've definitely established people have, and all sorts of people have a real interest in crime.
They do. We were talking about that, actually, weren't we? And why you... It's another thing that's fascinating today is that John Venables, who was, when he was 10, abducted poor Jamie Bulger, the two-year-old, in 1993. And Venables has been taken back to jail now for the third time. A deeply troubled man of 35. What drove him to abduct with Robert Thompson Bulger this tiny boy and then brutally kill him is still a matter of speculation. It's a horrifying case. But Venables has really, really never recovered. I'm not saying I have any sympathy for Venables.
No, I don't know, but he was a child.
He was a child when he did it. He was 10. So was Thompson, his friend.
Mm.
But Venables has not coped. Even he's been given two new identities. He has not coped.
Has he talked at all about why? No.
Never.
I suppose no one would say anyway.
No. And also, but, you know, he's had trouble with drugs. He's had trouble with drink. He's had trouble with child pornography. He's a deeply troubled man. Deeply. Yeah. It begs that age-old question about true crime. Is it nature?
Nature versus
or nurture.
Nurture,
or was it? Is it something that happens? Because we've talked about it.
Are people born evil?
Yes, and that classic one about serial killers. There's almost always a pattern. At the as a young age, they start torturing animals. They take small thefts, setting fires, all of that, and then escalates into petty crime, burglary, fraud, and off we go.
Have they all been dropped on the head as babies?
The answer is no.
It's very true. Very true.
Well, it's absolutely true that Peter Tobin, who we're talking about today, certainly wasn't dropped on his head.
We're going to officially start now. Today we are doing The Ordinary Abductor.
This is a man called Peter Tobin, who was born, ironically, very, very near where I was born. Also, only a year after.
A lot of these killers we're covering seem to be around the same age as you, Dad.
No, I'm afraid that could be true.
I'd love to do something else.
He was born in Johnston in Renfrewshire in August 1946, which is not very far at all from where I was born, in Greenock in Renfrewshire. And he was the youngest of eight children in an Irish Catholic family. There were a lot of Catholic families in Renfrewshire. It was just after the war. It was a pretty poor time. There are not many jobs. But Tobin was troubled. And that's what makes it so interesting, this question of nature or nurture. Because at the age of seven, he was sent to an approved school, which in those days was a kind early version of Borstal. Borstals don't exist anymore. Well,
when you say he was sent to an approved school, do you mean that like he displayed behaviour that made them send him there?
Desperately bad behaviour.
He was behaving very badly from a very early age.
Yeah, from a very early age. And after that, he went to a young offenders institution. And essentially, you could say that he was created partly by his nature, but also partly by his treatment in society. And again, Tobin rapidly developed, when he got into puberty, a fascination with violence towards women. Now, he had older sisters and older brothers.
Was he the youngest of
eight? He was the youngest of eight. Now, has that got something to do with his sisters? Only a matter of speculation. I don't think we can be sure. My instinct in this particular case is that there was, I hate the phrase evil gene, but there was something in his nature.
Nature. And what about his parents? What did his parents do?
They were perfectly upright, quite hardworking. I don't think there's any record of his being abused, which is a classic quality in serial killers that emerge. I think he was just, unfortunately, wrong. The reason I think he's so interesting is that he is phenomenally charming. He is very fluent. He's very eloquent. He's very manipulative. He married three times, each of the women being utterly charmed by him until they realised.
And they divorced him.
All of them.
Was he abusive to them?
Extremely abusive. Okay. But let's get back to that.
Yeah.
After the troubled childhood, he spent a small amount of time in jail. Petty theft, burglary, the classics. Yeah. Absolutely classics.
And he was still living in Renfrewshire.
He was still living in Renfrewshire. But in 1970, by 69, he'd married a 17-year-old.
He was 24. Now, she was 17.
Yeah. One of the things about Tobin is that he has a fascination with young women. All the women he married were in their teens. They were all manipulated by him.
Yeah.
They were all subjugated to his will.
They're effectively children.
Effectively. But interestingly, and I think this is absolutely fascinating about him, he obviously was a very clever man. And he targeted people whom he saw and realised were vulnerable. Vulnerable women. Probably had been abused or had a very unhappy childhood.
Yeah, and he was there rescuing them.
Exactly.
He was going to protect them.
I think the last wife, in fact, even described him at one point as she saw him as my knight in shining armour. It wasn't until later
that she realized
she was married to a monster.
Yeah.
Which she actually admitted in a book called Escape from Evil in 2011. He could charm the birds from the trees.
Yeah.
Literally.
But, I mean, I suppose that's not that different from what we were talking about Joanna Dennehy week before last. That same thing of that kind of sway that she had over those men, that kind of... You know, the way she made them feel and...
She hypnotised them.
Yeah.
Yes.
What we were saying about being released because you were infatuated with someone.
Yes. Unfortunately, it does happen. Anyway, the first wife, called Margaret Mountney, disappears in 1971.
Disappears?
Well, she doesn't disappear, she flees.
She runs away from Tobin.
Yes, but by this point, he's left Renfrewshire and moved to Brighton.
And she's living with him in Brighton, or yes. She's still in Renfrewshire?
Yes, no, they've moved to Brighton and she can't stand it, and she takes off. He remains in Brighton. In fact, he's a great man for moving about the country, but particularly between the South Coast and Scotland. And a lot of the story of Tobin involves him having... He had 40 aliases.
40 aliases?
40. And that was why he was so difficult to track.
And the definition of that is just a different name, or that's actually like having like a more than one driving license.
Yes.
He had forms of identification.
All sorts
of 40 forms of identification.
All sorts.
To
escape the attention of the authorities, essentially. So he's still in Brighton, and he marries again, this time a nurse, rather out of character for him. She was 30, and she was called Sylvia Jeffries. She had a son and a daughter with Tobin. Sadly, the daughter died as a child, in infancy, but the son survived. But yet again, in 1976, she fled. Now, we have clearly got a man who wants to abuse his partner. He subjects his first two wives to a great deal of violence, and yet, nevertheless, they stay with them. How often have we talked about why on earth do they stay?
I know, but I think we don't know enough about... Yeah, it's a really big, complicated issue about domestic violence and why people stay in violent relationships.
A lot of people say, and I've read it so many times, that sometimes the women blame themselves.
I brought it on. I think that's just one of many reasons. And also fear. If someone's threatening to kill you and harming you and then says, if you try and leave, I'll kill you, you probably are going to stay or harm your children, or you're going to harm your family. Leaving is the hardest thing to do when you're... Rather than it being like, why wouldn't you do this? This is the easiest thing to do. Actually, what you're saying is that leaving is the hardest thing to do if you're in an abusive relationship.
I think it is.
Yeah.
But nevertheless... the second wife flees. Now, exactly what Tobin was up to in a period of, say, between 1976 and 1987 is a matter of conjecture, which we'll return to, because in my own mind I've always been convinced that Tobin killed repeatedly in that period.
Oh, you mean that he's committed crimes that we don't know about, or hasn't been...
One of the things about Tobin is there are an awful lot of unanswered questions, which is why he is very, very interesting.
I wonder why we called him ordinary then, because he appeared...
He's perfectly...
Because he just melded into society.
Yeah, he
disappeared.
Absolutely. Quite good-looking.
You couldn't trace him.
Quite good-looking, very eloquent, commonplace, ordinary, if you like, not badly dressed, drove a commonplace car, I think Austin Metro or something at one point. He didn't stand out in any way. We've said to each other before, he certainly didn't have horns or a tail or a black cloak. But what is clear is that by 1987, he'd taken up with a 15-year-old.
15.
Called Kathy.
That's taking it too far.
That's called Kathy Wilson, who was to become the third wife.
You can't marry someone when they're 15.
They married just after, but that by which time they married when she was 17. The exact date of the birth of their son is always slightly clouded in mystery, but what is not in doubt.
Slash, I definitely got her pregnant before it was legal.
But I couldn't possibly comment, but there's no doubt at all that she had a son with him called Daniel, that they moved from the South Coast to Bathgate, again back in Renfrewshire. He abused her roundly.
Okay, sorry, just pre this part. Like, is there, and so I presume she had a really tough time, which is why her parents were like, not just saying you can't marry this.
No, she'd had a terrible childhood. Okay. She turned in, she once admitted, and I think it was one of the most moving interviews, she said, I turned into my mother. I was waiting to be abused almost. I was fulfilling a cycle.
Yeah.
But what is clear is that he terrified her. He subjected her, and remember, this is a teenager. He would hire prostitutes, which he would bring back to the flat where he's got the son and his teenage wife, whom he would abuse. The prostitutes make his wife and son watch, you know, tie them up, gag them, beat them, abuse them. Mm. We are talking about a very, very...
really seriously sadistic and awful.
Absolutely horrible man. Finally, he says, if you leave me, I'll kill you. She finally plucks up the courage to grab her son, a toddler, and run for it. But it takes some time. However, unbeknownst to her, in the early part of 1991, Tobin kidnaps, abducts a girl called Vicky Hamilton.
How old is she?
16. Even more chillingly, after he's done so, he moves the family from Scotland to Margate in Kent, the teenage wife, the son, and in some way, and we still to this day don't know how, he transports the body of Vicky Hamilton with him.
The live body?
The dead body.
So he abducts her and kills her.
After raping her, abusing her, and strangling her. Although the cause of death remained a matter of speculation.
And then...
So the family moved to Margate, number 50, Irvine Drive.
The whole family?
Well, baby, well, toddler.
Toddler, wife.
And Tobin.
And the body.
And the body.
Of a girl. Of woman? How old was she?
16.
That's extraordinary.
A girl who had been to visit her sister Sharon in Scotland and was sitting on a bench in Bathgate, where at that point Tobin was living, eating chips and waiting for a bus. And he abducted her.
It is chilling. That's really terrifying.
What he subjected her to is only a matter of speculation, but what is not in doubt is that her dead body went with him to Margate.
He abducted her and did that to her sort of near his house, in his house, maybe. I mean, there's a possibility the wife knew it was going on and just... I don't think so.
I think it probably was not in the flat. House, because he swapped council houses. He's nothing if not smart.
Yeah, clearly.
He trades a council house in Bathgate for a council house in Margate.
Okay.
Back to the South Coast.
Why take the body with you?
Because he wanted...
He's not a necrophiliac.
No, he wanted to dispose of it. And he couldn't find an appropriate place to dispose of it.
What did he do? Like fold it up and put it in a suitcase? Like it would have started to smell and like...
Well, I think it was probably in the back of the car, to be honest. When they get to Margate, he builds a sand pit for his son Daniel.
Please tell me he doesn't bury the body in the sand pit.
He buries it under the sand pit. In which he lets his son play happily. By this time, however, and I am not being light-hearted in any way, he has effectively cut up Vicky Hamilton, certainly into two pieces, probably more, and wrapped her in
cling film or plastic.
Black plastic sheeting. Nevertheless, Tobin is, you know, still nice, a handyman. I do jobs for people. I'm very reliable. He also moves about a great deal. He hasn't been in Margate very long, I think only a couple of years, when he decides to move to Havant in Hampshire. Before he does so, incidentally, he abducts another girl 1991 in Hampshire.
In Hampshire.
Oh, okay. His new location, new on territory. The way to his new location.
And all this time he's like, so is he still known as Mark Tobin? He's got
it's still known as Peter Tobin.
Peter
yes.
Tobin, sorry.
Yeah, no.
And he's not using his aliases or...
Oh, he's using his aliases for all sorts of nefarious purposes.
So what's he using his aliases for? Just to like get stuff?
Fraud. Yeah, he likes to steal.
Fraud, okay.
Yes. We are talking about a man who's probably got multiple personalities.
So he's not working, I'm guessing.
Oh, yes.
He's working.
Oh, so he often has jobs.
But he's like making a living, getting by here or there, yes. doing this and that, yeah. and probably stealing, frauding, cheating.
Yeah. Exactly. He's living on the fringes, but not on the surface. On the surface is I think the people who live beside him in Irvine Drive saw him as a good neighbour.
Yeah.
Which is the point we've often made to each other. Evil doesn't come wearing a dark hat.
No. You mean no horns and tail?
No.
No.
Anyway, let's come back to that poor girl. She was called Diana McNichol. And she was hitchhiking from a pop festival in Hampshire in August 1991 to her home in Essex. She was...
don't hitchhike, guys.
Yeah.
I would put that along with the... And don't get into cars with people you don't know.
Guess who picks her up?
Friendly Tobin.
Peter Tobin. She's with a chap.
Your friendly Tobin.
She's with a chap. She gets into the back. The chap gets into the front.
I'm just going to say as a precursor to you telling the story that being with a man doesn't mean you're safe, because I once got mugged and my friend Harvey had come to walk me home, because in theory that means you'd be safe.
Yeah.
He just hit my friend Harvey and stole my stuff. So,
Being with a man doesn't mean you're safe.
No.
She gets into the car with Tobin. They drive and they drop the friend off to hitchhike round the M25.
At which point she thinks, I'm going to stay in the car with this guy.
This guy's going to give me a lift a bit nearer so I can get back home. She disappears off the face of the earth. Absolutely gone.
And that is so brazen, because her friend...
would have known.
...was in the car and saw this guy and knew that that was the last person she ever saw.
Hmm. But I don't think they ever found the other hitchhiker.
Man.
So, Diana McNichol also ended up under the sand pit in Margate.
Friendly go-to sand pit cover-up. Yes.
This time, after having been, of course, beaten, raped and strangled. We are talking about a man who has the most vile appetites and is a truly depraved individual. He comes to the attention of the authorities, however, when in August 1993, in the flat he's then living in at Havant with his son, Daniel, two girls, 14-year-old girls, turn up looking for a friend.
What do you mean? Sorry.
Want to see a neighbour's friend, and the friend isn't in. So they make the mistake of ringing Tobin's doorbell.
Oh, no.
Okay. So Tobin, who's got an infant toddler.
He's like, bing bong, jackpot, two young girls who arrived on my doorstep.
Okay. He says, oh, yes, of course you can stay. Very, as ever, very charming. And it quickly becomes clear, however, that they have encountered someone they could not possibly have dreamt of in their wildest nightmares. He drugs them, which becomes one of his patterns. He gives them extra strong cider mixed with vodka, mixed with drugs. He developed a pattern, in fact, of spiking women's drugs.
Yeah, I mean, that's just like... that. Do you know the thing I don't like? Like, oh, no, I'm going to approve of any kind of abuse or et cetera, et cetera. But there's something so cowardly about the druggers of this world. Like, you know, the sex rings and the awful, horrible
Rotherham.
Stories. Yeah, Rotherham and, you know, all that thing about, oh, I can get a 13-year-old girl and then I'm just going to lace her up to the eyeballs with XT or get her addicted to drugs and then do, you know, we're going to do whatever. Like, that is, that making someone unable to focus, function, anything so that you can do what you want is...
subjugation, isn't it?
Cowardly.
Well, it's worse. It's I think it's genuinely subjugation.
But it's so I don't know, if you have like a sounds awful and I had to describe it properly. You have like this rush from killing or whatever. You sort of do it with that person fully functioning, that person's fighting you, that person's whatever they're doing.
Yep.
But when you drug young girls to have your way with them, I don't know.
Well, I think the phrase have your way with them is a bit too kind. I mean, he raped and sodomized these 14-year-olds. And then, after having drugged them, they're barely conscious, switches the gas taps on, leaves with his infant son, and fully expects them to die. Sadly, or tremendously well for them, they survive.
Traumatized.
But they survive. He goes on the run.
Now, okay, so this is the first time he's like, there are two people. But he, so many thoughts running through my head. So okay. Firstly, he's going on the run for the first time, as in like, people are going to know he's done something bad.
Yes, and that is exactly right.
And secondly, he's got his infant son with him.
Well, no, the infant son's been deposited with the then still wife.
The wife, and okay, so this is it. So it's the first time.
Remember, this is a son of an Irish Catholic family. He goes to hide in an evangelical Christian community.
What a surprise.
In Warwickshire, under an assumed name, one of the many assumed names. Nobody knows where he's gone until his picture appears on Crime Watch, when the inhabitants of the community recognise him and say, oh.
Oh, hold on.
That's the chap who's
just joined our prayer group.
And the police arrive and he's arrested and indeed charged. And in May 1994, he actually does plead guilty at Winchester Crown Court and is sentenced to 14 years, of which he serves 10.
So the streets were safe for 10 years?
Well, certainly. In 2004, however, he's released. Now, by now, he's on the Violent and Sexual Offenders Register. He has to be.
Mm-hmm.
Enter another series of aliases. He's always changing his name. So Peter Tobin may appear on the register, but Pat McLaughlin doesn't.
Okay.
Or there are so many.
Yeah, whatever it may be.
So he disappears back to Scotland. He serves the prison sentence in England, but he goes back to Scotland. He goes to Paisley, another part of it.
Do they have different laws and prison sentencing types between Scotland and England?
But even with joined up policing, so to speak, it's very difficult to track a man who's using multiple identifications and who has now adopted the name at the moment of Pat McLaughlin. At some point in 2005, after his release, a woman is picked up in a bar in Glasgow and has her drink spiked on the second meeting. He meets her in a famous Glasgow ballroom called Barrowland, which is famous not least for what were known as the Bible John killings in the 60s. And we'll come back to that. He goes to work as a handyman in St. Patrick's Roman Catholic Church in Glasgow. And there he encounters a 23-year-old Polish girl called Angelika Kluk, who is living in the presbytery. She's doing some cleaning work. She's studying at the University of Gdansk in her native Poland.
I've been to Gdansk. It's very beautiful.
On the 24th of September, 2006, she is seen with Tobin. She disappears. A search ensues. Eventually, the police discover her body under the floorboards of the church near the confessional. An act of desecration, to put it politely.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely not religious. But
he has a religious something, doesn't he? He chooses churches a lot of the time.
Yeah. Do you think that's because he's religious or he's anti-religious?
Perhaps he's anti-religious. I accept that. Poor.
But just a quick one, though. That's like, what is that? That's an escalation in a way, but is that him? He's not... Is he bragging? He's committing crime so much within his circles that he'll surely get caught. Like, that's...
Well, actually, it's an interesting question.
Is he doing that because he wants to show off?
I think he's doing it because he thinks he can get away with it, to be honest. I mean, poor girl, beaten, stabbed, raped, and so the forensic evidence suggests buried alive.
Buried alive. Mm. That's one... Ugh, that's awful.
She'd probably been not particularly conscious, but nevertheless, the forensic evidence suggested that she'd been buried while she was still alive. He goes on the run. He travels to London. He gets himself admitted to hospital under another false name with a false complaint.
Why? Because he needs a place to stay or something? Which,
no, he doesn't think anybody's going to look for him in a hospital. But they do, and they find him. He's brought to trial in March 2007. And he tries to blacken his defence. Try to blacken Angelica Kluck's name. We had consensual sex. She was having sex with the priest and all sorts of other people. She was a harlot, in the old-fashioned phrase. Absolutely outrageous, but very typical behaviour.
Yeah.
Thank goodness, and quite rightly, the jury didn't believe him, and he's found guilty. He's given 21 years and is described by the judge in that case, Lord Mingies, as a truly evil man. Now, other things begin to unravel. The police search his home in Bathgate. Earlier home.
One of the first homes.
Yes. In which they find all manner of trinkets, watches, rings, necklaces.
The classic trophy.
The trophy. 35, 36 items.
35 to 36 items. So potentially...
A lot.
Trophies from lots and lots of women.
Lots of victims.
But Dad, how do people go missing and nobody knows where they've gone?
It happens so often.
Why are there people sadly, who don't have anyone to look after them, who want to know where they are?
It's just one of those...
So he's preying on the most vulnerable members of society.
He is indeed. Okay. The police search Bathgate. Then they search his house in Southsea. And finally, this is Police Scotland, finally arrive at 50 Irving Drive in Margate.
So they've gone right back to the beginning and then they start...
They traced all his houses, okay? They get to
Margate. Not the sandpit.
They finally...
Wait, is the sandpit in Margate?
Yes. They finally dig up the sandpit in Margate to discover the bodies of the two girls who went missing in 1991, Vicky Hamilton and Diana McNichol. At that point, it's clear to them they're dealing with something quite different from what they thought they were dealing with. It's a difference of scale.
You mean that? But they found 35 trinkets. Trinkets. Then they found two bodies.
And now they know that they've got a serial killer on their hands.
Yeah, big one.
There's no doubt about it. Eventually, in 2008, Tobin is convicted, of course by this point he's in jail, of the murder of Vicky Hamilton. Not least because he pleads innocent, but the
He pleads innocent?
Yes, he doesn't plead guilty. There's very good DNA evidence on the sheeting. This is suspicions of his behaviour in Bathgate, and there's a knife which they've recovered from Bathgate, which has got Vicky Hamilton's DNA on it. Not surprisingly, the jury convict. And the judge in that second trial says, and I think it's a wonderful phrase and absolutely appropriate, you are unfit to live in a decent society. And there can be no doubt of that. In the search of Irving Drive, as I say, they come across the second body. And they then, Tobin has already been convicted of Vicky Hamilton. Now we're talking about a man who's facing three murder trials in three consecutive years. Very unusual.
And they're not going to be like, oh yeah, those must be isolated. He's like a serial killer who kills one person per decade.
No, absolutely not.
Not decade. Years.
He faces three murder trials in three consecutive years. He has been killing since 1991 that we know of.
Yeah.
Okay. In December 2009, Tobin finally offers no defence against this charge of the murder of Dinah McNichol. And this time, he's been tried in England, and he's given a whole life term. In other words, you will die in jail. He's condemned to be imprisoned in Scotland. He's in HM Prison, Edinburgh.
How old is he by now?
Well, if you think about it, if he was born in 1946, he's well into his 60s. The police launch what became known as Operation Anagram in search of other victims. Try as they might, they cannot find other victims. Maybe they've just disappeared. They want to trace who owned the things that were discovered, the rings, the necklaces, the watches. They don't. They try to see if perhaps he was Bible John, who was killing in the 60s in Glasgow when Tobin was in Glasgow.
Oh, hold on.
Glasgow.
Who's this fellow?
Well, Bible John is a very famous...
Oh, so when you said about the Bible John killings in Barrowland, what happened there?
There was a serial killer on the loose in Glasgow in the 60s who operated around the Barrowland ballroom.
Okay.
And a number of women went missing there. That crime has never truly been solved.
And it could have been Tobin.
It could have been Tobin. In fact, Professor David Wilson, the criminologist, wrote a book suggesting it was Tobin. Another book has suggested it was Frederick West, who lived in Glasgow at that time when he was an ice cream seller.
What do you think?
I genuinely think the jury is out. Tobin did look quite like Bible John, and he also had a cracked tooth on the upper right. It's possible. I don't know. But what I do know is that Tobin has never expressed a moment's remorse, has never done anything except boast. To one prison psychiatrist, he boasted that he's killed 48 women.
Which very well could be true.
It could. But then says with a typical Tobin smile, but you'd have to prove it, wouldn't you? We are yet again confronting that classic formula.
What is the deal? Like, the serial killers, they're so smart. It would be nice if they just channeled all their evil criminal mind into like science and like help discover the cure for cancer.
Well, or, I'm afraid,
you know,
human nature being what it is,
I know
this really is Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
There has
Hyde.
To be a yin to yang, doesn't there, Dad? There has to be like a, for all the good, there's just a much bad. Yeah. I'm afraid.
All I would say is that I think there are very few men who send a true shiver down my spine, but Tobin is certainly one, because he is utterly remorseless. It's all to the greater glory of Peter Tobin. Oh, look what I've done, and I've done much more than even you know.
So he could have done, yeah. And I guess that thing is right, like, because he's so ordinary. He like made everyone believe that he was so ordinary and he wasn't doing anything, even though
he was. And he was also charming, eloquent, manipulative, quite handsome, and partners stayed with him. It's a very, very dark case.
That's really.
So let's finish with something more cheerful.
That's grim. Thanks. It's Peter Tobin, the ordinary abductor. Next week I'm going to Tallinn in Estonia. We're doing the Snaiton Strangler, Mark Martin.
Yes.
As you can tell from my pronunciation, I don't know anything about him, so we'll soon find out.
He is a fascinating character. He once wrote a letter from jail saying, I'm famous, ha ha ha. I'm on the headlines of the local paper.
I'm not sure how much that is to be proud of, but... he felt it was. That's fair enough.
Oh, three murders. He thought, well, this is really good.
He thought, hey, I really made it.
Oh, well, let's not.
Let's not spoil it. Let's try and
end on a cheerier note. You're going to Tallinn to a film festival?
I'm going to Estonia, to Tallinn, to a film festival where I've been asked to be on a panel there, which I think will be, I don't know is the answer. I don't know exactly what that's going to be like. I have to be in a panel where I have to try and explain how actors get into films. I think I need to encourage the young acting population of Estonia to show them how they can get onto the big screen. I don't know if I necessarily know the answers to those questions, but I will. They said to me, is there any visual aids you want to bring? I can't imagine what kind of visual aid an agent would bring to a...
I suppose you could bring pictures of your clients.
Panel discussion. Yeah, I know, but they don't really want to know about my clients. They want to know, like, how come Alicia Vikander can go from Sweden and then, like, win an Oscar?
Yeah. I think that's exactly what they want to know.
I mean, the answer to that question is, A, she's a very, very, very talented actor, and B, she speaks extremely good English.
Mm.
So my first tip to the actors of Estonia will probably be...
Speak very good English.
Speak very good English. Which is, you know, just the way of the world, I'm afraid.
Oh, next week, what am I doing? I've got... I'm doing a tour of the pictures in the Garrick Cocktail Bar at one of my joys next week.
And I'm not sure that everybody listening knows what the Garrick is, Dad.
Well, it's a gentleman's like club in London, which I belong. But otherwise, I've got lots of things. I've got lunch with my one of my publishers.
Not going to the theatre?
No, not next week, as far as I know.
I'm going for dinner with my friend Kelly this evening. Kelly works with me, but also with my friend.
Wonderful.
We're going for dinner for my B-Day. And on Saturday, I'm having lunch with you.
Yes, back at Joe Allen.
My birthday lunch. Perhaps they'll put a candle on a brownie for me.
I'm sure they will. They always do.
We tell them.
We always do.
Just tell them before we get there, so maybe I get a free glass of Prosecco, yeah?
Oh, but well, keep your fingers crossed. Keep your fingers crossed.
And my friend Prue's coming, so that'll be really nice. And I'm having some birthday drinks, which... It's making me feel kind of anxious, but actually it's very low key, so there's only about 10 people going now, so it's actually not really a drinks thing at all.
Oh, it's great.
It's a small gathering.
I've been lucky enough to be invited to that, so I'm certainly going to that.
Oh, well, I really hope you do come. People going would love to see you.
Well, we won't talk about crime.
All my friends like you very much. Well, I mean, hopefully they'll all have been listening to the podcast so they can give us some more
feedback.
Well, oh, yeah, so we should say all those things. Don't forget to give us feedback, guys, on our... Twitter and our Instagram and our email address, which is bloodties.podcast@gmail.com. And thanks to my brother for the music, George Lee for our caricature, and our producer Poppy Damon for helping us do everything.
She did. She rang me up this week.
Yeah, I know. She wanted you to
talk about Charles Manson.
She emailed me being like, can your dad talk about... Poppy has like a lot of other proper jobs, including working for Radio 4.
But I'm afraid I passed. I don't think I could have added anything. You need an American, really, to talk about Manson. The most interesting thing about Manson, this is at the end and we won't go on,
is
that he never actually killed anybody.
What did he just...
He's
didn't
always
he willed
called,
people to kill
he's
people.
He's always called a serial killer. He never killed anybody.
What did he do that he
inspired,
willed people to kill themselves?
He inspired his followers, the cult, to kill for him.
Of course.
He gave these other people...
But he never took
He
a
never
knife.
Did anything.
Yeah, yeah.
They took a lot of LSD. They took a lot of drugs. And he orchestrated it, but he actually
never killed
anybody. And he's always called, in shorthand, a serial killer.
That's funny, though. Do you not think he is one?
Yes, I do think he is, but I think it's still shorthand.
It's an interesting point.
It is an interesting point.
If you are the person inciting other people to kill, but your hands are clean, does that mean that you're clean?
You're guilty.
You're definitely
you're
still
guilty.
Guilty.
Anyway, I look forward to the next podcast.
Me too. We'll see you in 2 weeks' time, and thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.